almost want you to sing us in, Ben. Like, I feel like we should start at the end each podcast with "Shut Up and Run." Hey, welcome to the podcast. Sorry, go on, go. What were we going to say already?
I was just saying, I am singing as we get our 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 countdown. I'm just sort of mouthing the lyrics, getting ready.
I know, and that's why I always expect you're going to start singing. But welcome, welcome. Go on, start us off with a song. Go on, Benji.
With a song, yeah. Or our song. Shut up and ride, 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 ride. Shut up and ride. You should hear me do WAP.
Yeah, we've got a guest, by the way. He's just going beautiful in the background. Who's like, what the hell is this podcast I've come on? Welcome to the Shut Up and Ride podcast. Benji is with me and he is as talented as he is handsome. And you will be very pleased to know that if you listen to the last podcast, you may have heard a very out of it Benji, and he is off the Oromorph and his eyes are no longer glazed and he looks like a normal human again. Welcome to real life again, Benjamin. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I feel a lot more with it. Like, yes, I don't think I realized how out of it I was till I listened to that last episode back, if I'm honest. But yeah, I feel good to be off the painkillers. Got my dressings and stuff changed on the knee. It's all looking good. And yeah, we are on track. And this week I finally combined mobility scooter and horses together. In spectacular fashion. It went much better. I've got a couple of videos I need to share of Malik trying to maybe kick it a little bit at the start, which was a little bit scary, because if something scares him, which is really, really unlike him, but every so often it will, he will double barrel with both back legs and then leave. The problem is that when I'm sat down, that's like head height.
So, you need to be wearing your Charles Owen helmet.
I do,
but I know on this podcast.
I do, but I might need to ask Charles Owen for a human cannonball helmet. Because I discovered when you're a kid and you've got your skull cap but you haven't got silk, or you lose your silk and you
that
look
was
like
my
you're gonna
favorite
be shot out
trick.
Of a cannon.
When I was running yards and I was cacking out with staff and then other clients, I just love stealing their skullcap silk as we're riding.
Yeah.
Like the best trick.
So, because you know how I'm a cap person. I like my big snapbacks. Always got a big hat on. Can't see the horse.
Yeah.
Because when I'm sat here and the peak's out in front of me and I'm looking up and I can see shoulder, but I can't see him. So it's a no hat, but I've got some amazing, even if I don't need to be in it, I've got an amazing comedy act brewing.
Oh, my God.
With the mobility scooter. So big things are happening. Yeah.
So anyone who hasn't listened to the last podcast, Ben has had ACL surgery and is now on a mobility scooter and doing his I was going to say your act. It's not your act. It's your livelihood. Sorry, Ben.
It is my act. Yeah, it's an act. Your, you can call it an act.
Via the scooter, please, can I get a video of you in your Charles Owen competition helmet pirate hat?
You absolutely can.
In the mobility scooter.
In the scooter.
I feel like that's what the internet was invented for.
Absolutely, I can do it. The other thing, I don't know, did I talk about how I discovered if you are a person that is in a wheelchair, I have newfound respect for you that I never had. Because the mobility scooter's great, but we haven't got a way to get it out and about. So, George, I went with George with the baby to Tesco the other day to do that.
The baby, he has a name,
Wild.
Yes.
Oh, also, side note, remind me about that. Terrible parenting. Need to point that out. But, so I'm in my little wheelchair that, again, borrowed off Gran, bless her, and took it. And I was wheeling myself around Tesco. I crashed into every shelf, every fresh produce aisle, various strangers. And they are harder to not wheelie than I ever realized. It is so easy to wheelie a wheelchair by accident. So absolutely, if you're in one, hats off to you, because I nearly did myself more of a mischief. And finally, I will just, bad parenting. So always called our dog, who is called Loki, we've always called him Ginger Pig, because he looked like Clarkson's Farm came out when he got the pigs, which is when we got Loki, and he had the little ginger piglets, and we said he looked like a ginger piglet, so we called him Ginger Pig.
Okay.
So then when the baby was born, I just referred to the dog as Ginger Pig and the baby as Pink Pig. And we had our two little piglets in the house, and it was really cute and it was really fun. However, if my son is not looking at us, you can say wild as many times as you like and he won't look. But if you say Pink Pig, he's like, yep, what do you want? So I'm just definitely at the moment, absolutely no nicknames, trying to make sure that my son actually knows his actual name.
Not Pink Pig. Okay, brilliant. Good. Jesus.
Brilliant in parenting. Yeah.
Do you know what?
Could be worse.
I think we need to make sure that this podcast does really well and earns enough money to pay for Wild's therapy when he's older. So please share and like this podcast, everybody, and we'll create a Save Wild fund. Oh, my God. Right. Without further ado, I'm very excited about this guest because I feel like today could get a bit spicy. I feel like we could get some proper like, I think we might annoy people, but it's fine because I quite like it. So this gentleman I met, I would say about 12 years ago. Is that right? He's looking at me strangely. Must have been. Basically, about that. Matt Campbell, you are MD, founder of, do I call you Equistream, Streams Global? What do we call you? What is the correct terminology for the whole? Because it is more than just bands for horses now. Give me your correct full title that I can do a better job of this terrible introduction.
Well, so the company is Streams Global, and we have a range of products that cross boundaries of different animals and people. So, I've known you since day one with our horse hats on. And so it's always been Equistreams, which is our brand in the equestrian industry. So you can call us what you like, really. Most will call us Streams or Magnetic Bands. I know people call me lots of names, so you can call me whatever you like.
Okay, God, in my opinion, because I bloody love you, because genuinely he has been at the end of the phone for me on more than one animal crisis occasion, as I'm having right now an animal crisis. And you've always been like, Jenny, don't worry, we have something. So to give this context, I met Matt. Actually, I met you more when you were basically a very good friend of mine, Matt Tarrant, a different Matt, and Kate Tarrant, who owned Lifton Manor, who's amazing in Reigate. You knew them, didn't you? And then we got introduced and you were coming out with these bands. And I'm not going to lie, Matt, how much, like, I first of all want to know, because we're going to get into so many questions from people about how do they work, why do they work. We want to talk today about holistic kind of methods versus traditional methods, because we have had a lot of comments, because obviously we've been working with you on the podcast and you've been our first advertiser, which is amazing that you've seen and kind of come in with us. Oh, God, I've got so many questions for you. I don't even know where to start. But we do have the odd comment as well, like, oh, my vet doesn't like these. So we're going to get into all of that. But I, first of all, want to know, like, how it came about, because there's a lot of kind of people who really believe in certain therapies and a lot of people are very anti. Where did you start with it and how did it come about for you? Because it's quite a random thing to get into, Matt. I'm not going to lie.
It's very random. And it all started with a family friend who was the inventor of our technology. I had a bad knee at the time and had been told to have a knee replacement. And I went down to see him just as a family friend, have a Sunday lunch kind of thing. And he explained to me that having a knee replacement was not the best route to go, to try this. And out of his drawer, he pulled what we now call Streams. He was one of these guys who was a bit like Doc from Back to the Future, white hair, pencil behind his ear.
Amazing.
Always was right, didn't want to. Just was right about everything and was just effectively a genius. And he explained to me that he had invented this this product for his wife's migraines and to put it in my sock and to go away and to let him know what happened. And 3 days, 4 days later, I'd still had it in my sock and my knee stopped hurting. So I effectively went to him and said, what is this? What is it all about? I didn't understand a word of what his response was. And he was terminally ill and had got to the point where he wanted this to not be left in a drawer. So he gave me the material and said, look, see what you can do. I think his words at the time were make a difference. So go out there and make a difference with this material.
I'm going to bloody cry.
So that's where it so that's really where it started. And his daughter, Katie, shout out to Katie if you're listening. She was in the equine industry. I wasn't. She had a horse at the time who I think now, with my knowledge now, had CPL or some form of CPL. And so she put the bands on her horse's legs. And a few days later, the horse was cantering around the field and looking pretty good, pretty sound. So it started really, the equine product started with that. And we developed a product and then went to trials with, we had 50 horses at the time who we approached horse owners through social media at the time who were applying bute for their horse. So they were just, you know, daily administration of bute and, you know, keep them going. And that's really where it started. It started from a understanding that actually there was some impact with this technology with horses. I think we're 75,000 pairs in with our horse bands now. So a lot of horses and a lot of, you know, we've made a big difference, I would say, to a lot of horses out there. Something I'm very proud of, and I know the company is. But with that comes a hell of a lot of challenges and a development of quite thick skin.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I think it's a good opportunity for not just myself, but for other people in the alternative health industry to make a difference and to understand that actually it's not all about clinical. You are going to get the challenges thrown at you of where's your evidence, where's your efficacy. But actually with the right people behind you and with the right stories to share, you can make a difference and you can get a brand or a product out to market. So really that's where it started. It started our horse product alongside our human product, which is a product that goes on the wrist or the ankle. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things that we're in four industries at the moment. So we're heavily involved in the equine industry. We also have a product in the canine industry, so dog collar, as you mentioned. We have a product, two products for humans. And we also have a product which is becoming quite successful in the bovine industry, helping cows reduce lameness. So again, not a commercial product, not something that you'll see too much on our website or out there, but a lot of cows now wearing them to help reduce their lameness. Right? So.
And the cow thing I want to get into, because I've written a note, cows, because I fucking love the cow thing. Like, I have, like, when Matt told me about the cows, I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting for cows. Because we forget about cows. We want to eat them, but most people don't give a shit about their welfare. I only eat happy cows. This is the whole thing. I feel like, okay, well, yeah, don't look at me like that, Benjamin. I won't eat. Like,
where's
my,
eye-opening?
Yeah. They, right. So, okay, I'll go into the cow thing now. So basically, I may want to, like, do some stuff with animal charities and I'm looking into trying to do, because I've done a long story, I went down a dark hole on LinkedIn through a lot of animal charity videos, and some of the stuff I've seen on welfare for cows is awful. And they even did like a video, they put like a GoPro on the end of the tunnel for the abattoir, and they video the cows coming towards the, before they're about to be killed, and they are fucking terrified. And then they did like, in Canada, the welfare of animals is not as good as in the UK for in agricultural setting. And there's like organic in England is kind of a standard of care, as well as like the fact that it's organic meat. In England, in Canada, that's not the case. It can be organic, but still live in a shed and have a horrible life. So I kind of went down a wormhole of basically I saw a video, if you don't want to listen to this, maybe fast forward, but of an organic dairy farm where a cow had given birth to her calf. And the guy had picked up the calf and was beating her back into the funnel with her calf that had just been born to get her back to producing dairy. And this was on an organic farm in Canada. So I went down this wormhole of what kind of meat I would happily have in my house. So in my house, we call it happy cows, cows that have been pasture, you have to call it pasture raised out here. Pasture bred, pasture raised, only and eat, live outside. So happy cows. So when Matt said to me that he was going to one of the biggest USA like cow people. I don't know what the word is. Sorry. And said, like, because we don't think about them and they put up with so much lameness and like, especially they say, oh, it's organic because you can't have antibiotics. But that means sometimes then the cows are having to put up with injuries and lameness because they're part of this organic system. Anyway, it's a whole minefield. I'm probably boring people, but I'm really passionate about the type of meat that my kids eat. I don't eat meat anymore because of it. I've been down too many wormholes. But when Matt said this to me, I was like, this is actually so important. Like, it's so important. And you're making cows happy, basically. Sorry, does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think it's part of the industry. We live in our equine world with our horses in the barn. And, you know, the volume of horses out there who are suffering with lameness versus the volume of cows out there who are suffering with lameness is incomparable. And particularly in America, where they have feedlots, where these young cows turn up and they're there to fatten up as quickly as possible. So they're on our plate as quickly as possible. I think there's a lot of change going on within that industry in America. They're looking at us as British and how we rear our animals, and they are trying to adopt some of the methods that our farmers use. And with that opens opportunities for companies like us to say, well, look what our collars can do. So I think the nice thing from our perspective is that some of the things we may touch upon on this is evidence-based, and having the efficacy and evidence behind us for us to make a claim, particularly in the equine industry. I think what we're doing in the bovine industry will help us across all sectors. You know, once you have clinical evidence to show a reduction in lameness on cow, then that's going to have significant impact on the equine industry. So I think the two go hand in hand, and it's much easier doing it than it is with humans, that's for sure. Even though humans can tell us how they feel, there's a lot more placebo involved with humans than there is with an animal. And also in the bovine industry, it's very monitored. It's more scientific, you know. And an animal who is lame is worth less to a farmer than an animal that's not lame. So there's a commercial value in the bovine industry to reduce lameness. With us and our horses, we want to reduce lameness because we want our horse to feel happy, or we're competing with our horse and we need them to be out competing and winning us money. So there's pressures in the equine industry that don't exist in the bovine.
I feel like Ben's nodding, and like you have, like Ben's leaning in with questions. I can see it already in his eyes. Like, he builds up to these things, Matt. But Ben, when I came to you with the idea of the bans, you and Simon were both a little, I was skeptical. I've got, oh God, I could go on about this all day. And it was the dog collars that really, yeah. Ben, you were quite skeptical, weren't you? And we were very much like, and you were the same, Matt. You were like, Jenny, I'm not going to advertise on the podcast unless the boys believe in the bans. And the boys were like, yeah, we're not happy talking about it unless we believe in them. And Ben, how did you feel when I, because you're open to stuff though, Ben, aren't you? You're very open.
Yeah, I'm open to anything and everything, but I would like, I don't need scientific proof, but I'd like at least something like, I'd like someone to explain it to me a little bit, or like at least anecdotal proof, even at the very least, and not from someone who feels desperate on either end, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? Either desperate to sell, or sometimes you see it, especially with horses and dogs, due to the emotional connection, where people want there to be improvement, even if there's not. So, like, and I think I've told a few stories on here, like where I've fallen out or burnt a few bridges that were actually started out as potential sponsorships because I've questioned quite heavily the products that people wanted me to interact with. And so, yeah, with these, the thing that really, really put my confidence in streams even off the bat was that I'd seen products like that be discouraged within competition, and that made me believe it instantly, because people that are competitive don't try and stop you using stuff that doesn't work. So that was my first thing that I was like, I'll give this a proper go. And then, like you said, Matt sent us the bands. And now I had two of my older horses. One of them has pretty bad arthritis in both coffin joints because he's a weaver. So those front legs take that hammer. And I've got another that was an Aventa.
I love the fact that Matt just did a weaving impression as well. Weave. We all do a little weave with
oh, and he's a weaver. Proper weaver as well. Like, you know, not just like a, not a mover. He's got the dip. He's got the full. When
did he have that when you
on.
Got him?
Yeah, he was. There's a whole tiny violin story. I sound really dismissive. Like, oh, it's terrible past. I can't be asked. No, it's more that like I get really bored where people, whether they be doing it for themselves or another human or for an animal, before they meet the human or animal, they're like, here's the sob story. And you're like, no, I can't be asked with that. But yeah, there was a point where this horse was locked in a stable for a long time and it was a stallion. Anyway. And a second horse of mine that was an Aventa before we had him and had a rotational fall and damaged his neck. They didn't know it had damaged its neck. It had had this rotational, then didn't want to do cross country anymore. So then that's why I ended up with it in my Liberty team. And then he started going lame and yucking on the bridle. And we got him x-rayed from top to bottom and he had arthritis in his neck. And that I find even more interesting because for anyone that doesn't know, the stream spans go on the legs. So the help with the coughing joints made sense to me. And that
we also have a question. Remind me, a listener has asked a question about where they go on the legs. So remind me about that one.
And like that has been incredible. Now that is a horse who he's done really, really, really well with the bands. And then another thing on top of that. So with him, it's been like combined care because I didn't realize this. I've not told you this yet, Matt, either. This is really quite fun and interesting. So we had that horse. I did get him. One of him had been jabbed just to try and help him because I was like, I just want him to like relax enough to chill out in a field. And then I got the bands. So I thought, oh, I'll bang the bands on him as well. And then it was all working. And then at some point this year, we sort of started looking through the books and I was like, definitely, like for definite, it's the bands that are working. Because I'd been looking back through all the invoices and stuff and it was like, oh, the jabs don't last as long. As like, it's been like 18 months, 2 years since I got this horse done. And it is better than he's ever been. He's happy as Larry. The one in the neck, because I'd got the confidence in them. When we found the issue with the neck, we started out by just putting the bands on him. Again, absolutely amazing. I had an old retired horse in the field that I'd spent thousands on at the vets just trying to find out what was wrong so I could make him more comfortable. The vets x-rayed and scanned everything. They couldn't find anything that, like, the most they found, they were like, one of his feet is slightly at a different angle to the other front feet, but we don't know why he's lame. Stuck the bands on him and now he's sound. Like, they've been absolutely, and I am a very skeptical person, but I think even...
It's not placebo, though.
No. Well, and it can't be placebo because I'm really skeptical of all this stuff. And then on top of it, it just works. And it works incredibly. And I love, like, especially, like, the boys wear them full-time in the field. If it's particularly wet, we make sure we go out and we make sure they're, like, clean the bands off, clean the mud off, make sure the horse's legs are still happy. Same in summer, just give them a check to make sure they're not sweaty and stuff, you know. But they've been, like, they've just been incredible for the horses. And then, like, this year I've had a calf tear before the ACL. And, yeah. You sent me a human band. I've had that on. That's helped phenomenally with getting me through having this calf tear. George wore the bands after pregnancy. They helped her with her legs and stuff after it. So it really is, like, and I am the most skeptical person with these things, but I think it works.
Do you think though, Matt, so it is like, obviously Ben is very in tune with his horses and can see a difference. the problem is we can make these big statements and people can go and buy them. But I find sometimes with people, what I've found is horses like to cover up actually how much pain they're in. So, for example, the amount of times you say, oh, it's lame on the front. And actually, once you do the investigation, you find out it's the opposite hind that's actually the problem. And so people, I think, can sometimes hear that, and you will notice differences in your horses, whereas there is a massive issue with a lack of knowledge, a lack of understanding of people's of horses. I sent you an article about the horse and hound and said there's actually a bit of a crisis at the moment, and welfare goes kind of, a lot of welfare issues go undetected, but like, and there's overrugging and there's not enough turnout and so many things. But I think, Ben, you would really see a change and notice it, whereas I think some people put it on and might go, this is a magical fix, I now don't need to pay for a vet. But actually, what they're not noticing is what the real problem is. Do you know what I mean? So then people might go, well, the bands don't work, my horse isn't fixed. Do you know what I mean? I'm not articulating as well, but do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. And, you know, I think from my perspective and from other people in the industry in similar situations to me, I think having Ben say the things he said has influence and relevance, because Ben, close your ears, Ben, he is an expert in the field, without doubt. So there has to be scientific clinical research done on products. There has to be. There has to be efficacy. Otherwise, we get into the snake oil and, you know, other situations, other products in the pile.
Them, and it will fix my corns. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly. You know, I think we as a species are naturally sceptical about things anyway. I don't think the last few years has necessarily helped. And I think really where we are, where we sit in the business, in this sector, is we're a complementary product. And I think that's really where it gets a bit lost sometimes. I think there's been companies in the past that have come into the market and don't approach it from a complementary perspective. But, you know, it's you got a horse that's lame, try this. We've never said that. You know, I think our approach is, look, you've got a lame horse, you carry on doing what you've been told to do, what you feel is the right thing to do for your horse. But look, why not try these alongside it? And the results of that, you decide for yourself. And I think that's really where there has to be a line drawn between clinical research products and alternative products. The issue we have, and I think the equine community has, is how do we get clinical proof? You know, I've been doing this years. I've seen thousands of horses with wingles, as an example, who have tried for months to do various things, compresses, you know, various ways of treating their horse's wingle, to a point where they almost give up. And then they try our product, and 7 days later, they've gone. And now I've seen that across thousands of horses. How do we get that clinically proven? I'm not sure we can. It's not, well, that as an example can't be clinically proven because it's a non-clinical condition. So, you know, what do we do as a business? How do I find 1,000 horses with wingles to run a study independently without being involved in that study? It's just not possible.
And you also need to find ones without wingles with perfect legs as well, don't you? To do a proper study, you need a control. So you need to find 1,000 horses without wingles. You need this perfect, a perfect storm for a clinical trial. I don't think people realise that you need a control as well as the problem.
Exactly.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, I am yet to. It is my biggest mission at the moment is to. It has been since day one. Really, is to get clinical research. We have clinical research. Is to have clinically published, peer-reviewed papers that support some of the claims that we make and have made, particularly when you first start off. You know, now we have thousands of customers that pretty much argue our case for us. You know, if someone comes online and badmouths us or says something bad against our product, generally me and my team will sit back and we'll let our customers argue for us. That's a lovely place to be. But you know, that's genuinely, it's an important part of having a brand in this industry. I think I said at the beginning of this, you have to have thick skin. I've come across some people, you know, industry specialists who monetize PhDs and have, you know, study something 15 years ago and 15 years later are the be-all and end-all of anything to do with equine. And the reality is that not many people understand our technology, because the technology itself is pretty much misunderstood. It is very complicated and incredibly boring. And I've done my very personal best to understand the technology in streams, but ultimately it's quantum physics, and it's dealing with frequencies and molecules and how they react to magnetic fields. And ultimately, that's not why I'm here. I love animals. That's where this started for me. And if you put our product on an animal and that animal benefits from it, that's good enough for me. I understand that that's not the same for everyone, and that everyone wants different influences to make their decision. But, you know, ultimately, we do our best to get clinical research. But as I've explained, it's just not feasible in most scenarios.
So that's what Ellis Francis has written on Instagram. They said, how do they actually work? And in capital letters, I can't even say the word, physiologically. Like, is there a way of giving us like an overview? Because it's like magnetic therapy. Like, is there a basic way of explaining how it works? Because isn't it funny? Like, my dad always used to wear a copper band, and everyone would be like, yeah, it's just a copper band. But no one ever goes, how does that work? Like, is there an overview?
Not so much an overview. I think I hear the copper band a lot. It's a generational thing. There's not many people I know from my generation ever worn a copper bracelet. But what I do know about copper in itself is that it's an indicator. So if you, someone once told me that the Romans used coppers for pots, water pots. So they'd fill up the water in the evening, and the next morning, if the copper pots were green, it would indicate that there were some impurities in the water, so that would be fed to the animals. And if the copper pots were not green, then it showed the water was clean enough to drink, and they would drink the water. So copper does nothing to us. Copper, as far as I'm aware, copper is an indicator of impurities within us. So that we'll put that to one side, because it doesn't produce an effect for us. Magnetic therapy in itself has really impacted us in coming into the industry, because there are products on the market today that are on an equal playing field to us when it comes to the brand. So some very well-known brands in the equine world who are using magnets that I can buy for 5p each. And there's three of them in a boot with a bit of sponge. And they're buying them in from, you know, China or wherever. And they're incredibly low cost. They're not manufactured for purpose. They're not proprietary technology like ours. They are creating an aura about what their product can do off the basis of Cleopatra once using a magnet on her wristband and it helping her joint pain, because someone wrote about it. So I think really we have to step away from the magnetic therapy industry. We're not a magnetic therapy device as such. If you actually look at what we say in our bump about how our technology works, very different to a traditional magnet that you place against your skin. So to answer your original question is, how do we say to people the physiological effects that the product creates? The easiest way of describing it to people is the magnetic therapy. Go backwards slightly. The magnetic therapy industry, if you look at a lot of the products in the market, they talk about blood flow. They talk about how if you place a magnet against your body, it interacts with the iron in your blood, and that helps increase blood flow. And with that comes the, you know, the benefits of increasing blood flow. That's just a complete myth, and jumps ahead to my biggest beef this week, actually, which is lots of people telling me that magnets increase blood flow. I mean, one of those in particular is how CPL, so a horse with CPL should not wear magnetic devices. A vet told me that this week. And I asked that vet, why is that? And their response was, well, because magnetic devices increase blood flow, and you don't want to increase blood flow to a horse that's got lymphangitis or a lymph issue. But that's not true. Magnets don't increase blood flow. It's very simple to prove that magnets don't increase blood flow. You can use ultrasound as an example and actually see it in live view that your blood flow is not increased because the magnet's up against it. Or blood pressure. Blood pressure is a wonderful way of understanding how our blood flow is working. So if you had a horse that had no bands on and you monitored its blood pressure, and then you put our bands on and the blood pressure went up, then yeah, fair enough. You've increased blood pressure or blood flow. That doesn't happen. So I think really where we've come into the market, we've had the first few years was really trying to explain to people that you've been told for years a load of absolute nonsense. So just take a step back and stop worrying about the science of what you've been told has happened in the past. Let's have a look at some of the results that have been created by these products. And that's really where magnetic therapy, the industry is at the moment, is that they are adjusting their marketing spin on what their product does and how it affects. When we came to the industry, magnetic therapy was for everything. Helps this, it helps that, helps this, helps that. And I've noticed quite a big change in the industry where those companies are now concentrating on certain things rather than everything. Mm-hmm. And so how does our technology work? You know, how long you've got is bioresonance. It has a frequency within our material that as molecules and things pass that frequency, they interact with it. It's like a tuning fork to your body. So magnetic therapy, you place it against an injury and it helps a localized area. Bioresonance therapy, you place it against your body and it creates an effect throughout your body. And it's why we see a product that goes on a horse's leg help with kissing spine. Or, we've got dentists who have shown impact of MAMS reducing inflammation in the jawline. And so, you know, it impacts the whole body as opposed to magnetic therapy, which just interacts local area. It heats up local areas.
See, when me and Matt were chatting at the Shut Up and Ride first live podcast thing at the Ligon Arms, the bit that, because we got onto this, I know I'd had a few drinks, but we got onto this. And as soon as you started talking about the frequency, this is one of the things that excites me so much, because there's all that scientific study, isn't there, that like particles that you fire frequency through will move differently if observed or not observed. Mm-hmm. So like, just like, does that make sense? Like, if you send these like vibrations, these frequencies through particles and you watch them, they will do one thing, but you send exactly the same thing through them and you don't watch them and they'll do something else. Like, it's one of those aspects of the world that we don't understand, but is of the fabric of everything. And that's what I think I love about the bands. And then like what I'd say to you as well, Matt, is remember, if anyone's ever been an arsehole about it, that the man who figured out that we had germs and you needed to wash your hands to not kill people in surgery was dead before the rest of the world accepted it.
Yeah, very true. I mean, I remember one thing that he told me, similar to what you just said, was about parachutes. And he said, I think he was heavily military background, jumped out aeroplanes with parachutes in the dark kind of thing. And he once said to me, do you know that a parachute has no clinical evidence that it saves your life? Okay, no, why? Well, I tell you, mate, don't jump out of an aeroplane without one.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've taken that on board for the last few years, really, that it's not the be-all and end-all. I do value it highly, and I think a lot of people value, you know, we don't want those snake-oil salespeople, like I said before, but we do need to have a bit of an open mind to why there are a lot of products available that are not clinically proven.
Yeah.
Mm. Us being one of them.
They work great. And like you're saying, like the same with me with my recovery for my knee at the moment. The doctors didn't send me away from hospital and say, here's this one thing, do that and you'll be fixed. Like in the same way that you know you need a saddle, stirrup leathers, stirrups, a girth, a breastplate, just to get on the bloody thing. Like the same way when it comes to recovery. Yeah, if you put the bands on, but you feed the horse like crap, don't take care of it, and don't, you know, you're not going to see the top results. Whereas, like you say, with the magic that the streams have, add that to your proper rehabilitation and everything, and the results, like, honestly, two of my horses, I did not think I was going to be able to carry on doing anything with them. I thought they were going to be field ornaments, and now they're as good as they were 10 years ago. It's just,
you know, that's why I do what I do, Ben, really. I mean, that means so much to me when I hear people say that it's impacted the horse. I said from the start, I'll make a difference. He said to me, make a difference. And when I hear stories like that, it's made a difference. You know, maybe the 50, 60 bands that we sent out yesterday, just think how many we've helped.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
A set of bands is less than your vet'll charge just to drive to your bloody yard.
That's true. I didn't say that. You did.
So, like, if you're stuck and you're like, I don't know what to do with this dog, this horse, a cow. I didn't know there were cow things. With even yourself, it's less than a call-out fee.
Yeah.
But equally, still call them, you know? Yeah. That's the important thing. That's working. You still call them. Don't just get on the internet, spend 80 quid and think, right, okay, that's the horse sorted. Well, I'm going to go to the pub. The reality is we are a complementary product. That means it goes alongside other treatments that you potentially have been told to give your horse. Don't just use us.
Like Gregor and Jenny, complimentary.
But just, also, I think a few problems as well is, A, people don't give stuff enough of a try and maybe haven't seen what's wrong with their horse in the first place to be able to notice a difference. But secondly, you are, like, we had a couple of comments when we were doing our discount code, which I think is our discount code still valid for people listening, Matt? Shut up 10. But when you were advertising on the pod, and you are coming on tour with us, so you're still with us. Woohoo! Thank you very much. We had a couple of people message and going, my vet saw it and my vet told me they don't work and not to wear it. And then one person did comment saying the vet said it would have an adverse effect. So my response to that, I immediately messaged you and I said, what should be my response? But my response to the vet that said it would have an adverse effect is like, well, surely that's a double negative? I don't know. Well, if it's having an adverse effect, then you're admitting that it does stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Get that. Well, I think it was my response to you, wasn't it?
Get a new vet, yes. Because if a vet's saying it won't do anything, that I can get. There's no clinical evidence. You're a very evidence-based vet. Fine, that I can deal with.
Yeah.
But a vet saying it has a negative effect is then therefore a vet saying it does something. Does that make sense? And yeah,
it does. It's like the FEI banning our product would actually be fantastic for us, because it would be kind of advertising the fact that they admit it does something.
It works.
Yeah, it works. Don't use it. It's going to help your horse run faster. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, the technology is quantum physics, and it's basically, have you ever, I'm going mad here, but have you ever read the trilogy by Philip Pullman, the Northern Lights trilogy, where the world is made up of dust and you can get between two different worlds because of dust particles, and like, it's all about like quantum physics, and like, feels a bit like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the world's made up of dust, and basically your band are moving our cells and everything, but we don't really know how.
Yeah, and I think it's important to tell your listeners, actually, that we harm no snakes, we harm no fairies, we haven't found some magical forest somewhere where we've captured fairies and they produce the results for us. Equally, we don't just stick a bit of plastic around your horse's leg and hope it works. But after 10 years doing this, we wouldn't be here if what we say wasn't happening out there. And I think that's a really important part of it. You know, I think that companies must come and go as they make claims, and they don't work, so they don't survive. We're still here, and
you don't go from a product for people, then people and dogs, then people, dogs and horses, then people, dogs, horses and cattle, if it doesn't work. Not unless, Matt, you are a billionaire that desperately wants rid of his fortune and you're just throwing stuff down the hole. But like,
what I don't understand though, Matt, actually, I'm going to just say this quickly. With the Philip Pullman series, you know, it's all about people having a demon that lives on your shoulder. And we always say that And we have a tiny, tiny little Jack Russell who wears one of your bands. And he's tiny. He looks like a little, he looks like a giant gerbil. And my husband in his head always thought that his demon would be like a snow leopard or a python. And we're like, no, your demon is Woof, this tiny little dog that lives next to you. So what I don't understand for me is I do like a bit of science, even though, how did you get to this, obviously mad scientist that you mentioned at the beginning who created this product? How do you reproduce what he created? Like, do you have a big lab? And like, how do you remake the bands? Like, does that make sense?
So
how
he
did
gave
you go
us,
from a bit in a song?
He gave us the formula.
Okay, right.
Yeah, so he gave me the formula of, I think he said 13 years it took him to get the formula right for the...
Of the different magnetic frequencies and things and...
Yeah, and that's achieved by the materials that we use, which are frankly quite top secret. And we manufacture the material ourselves. So I'm not going to a factory abroad and saying, right, I want that. We instruct them with data sheets to say, this is what we want manufactured. This is the frequencies. This is how we do it. And so we have a factory that make that alongside us, who are in the UK.
And it is top secret.
Yeah.
Ooh,
it is. I think there's four people who know that frequency. I mean, that's the big part of the product. People have asked me in the past, why have I not patented it? Because then I have to disclose that, and then I've lost my control. And yeah, we manufacture it in 7.5 kilometer runs of material. Your horse bands have 32 centimeter strips in, so you can imagine 7.5 kilometers on reels. It's a full on manufacturing process. It's pretty cool, really, to see it. We then have a team that make the outer sleeves. You know, the bits that you see. That's half here, half abroad. Sadly, a lot of the materials that we have in a lot of our products these days, you just can't get here. If you can, they're only buying it from China or Taiwan or Bangladesh or what have you. So. We are a true global company in the sense that we are buying from various people all over the world. I think we've sold to 68 countries now. So we've got, I was speaking to someone a couple of weeks ago who has 3 horses wearing our bands in the Cayman Islands, which was quite a nice thing to picture them.
I have a feeling especially your dog collars sales may have increased in Canada because I bang on about them all the time.
It's a really tricky industry. It's a very tricky industry, the dog industry. It's very much controlled on regular pet feed. They want you in their pet shop every week. So a product like us doesn't really get the exposure it, I think, deserves. They want you to, you buy a collar off us and in theory you're not going to buy another one until you want another dog collar or have another dog. So it's not the greatest penetration in the market, I'd say. But, you know, frankly, the equine industry is a lot nicer to work in from a personal perspective than the canine. I haven't even touched on the fact that we work with plants. You put our products around plants and it makes them grow quicker. So that's pretty cool.
All right, I am going to try that. I'm going to fucking do that. I'm going to take some before and after. Because I have a feeling that I'm really, really good at growing plants. It's just my plants don't try hard enough because they always fucking die. And I think it's not me. I think it's them. I think they could work harder. So can I just say about the dog collars? I know I've said about this on the pod a million times, but I'm going to say this because genuinely, that's one of the reasons. So you, when you first produced the dog collar, gave me a sample for my dog, Miss Phoebe Buffet, Regina Phalange, because Phoebe at the time was on Metacam for a hip arthritis. And you were like, Jenny, these are trial ones. Do you want to try one? And she did get better and she came off the Metacam. And I was a bit like, this was before I was a true believer. And I was a bit like, was it the collar? Was it the Metacam? Don't know, but I've got a free collar out of it. Yay. So I kept it on her. And I think literally about 3 or 4 years later, because I'd had my son by then, the collar broke because it was the old type. It's not the type you sell now. And it was like within a sleeve. So the sleeve had just gone. And I was like, well, so what? I didn't know if it worked or not. And which I should have done because I did know that they were working on Finn, my horse, because they were working on his Wingles. So I hadn't put the two and two together. And anyway, Phoebe within a couple of days was crippled. And I mean, not just was a bit lame. She was fucking crippled. She couldn't jump in the car. I couldn't take her for a walk. My nuts pointer cross was totally crippled. And I actually rang you, Matt, like in bits going, Matt, the only thing that's changed is your collar's come off. And you were like, Jenny, I will send you a new one straight away. Try it. And you even said to me, look, I don't know. You should probably take it to the vet as well, but just give it a couple of days, maybe even a week, see what happens and let me know. And I remember taking her, lifting her into the car, taking her on a walk with her best mate 2 days after wearing the band, thinking I'm just going to let her hobble for a walk with her mate Pedro, my friend Jen's dog. And like, I'm sure she's probably still in so much pain. And I'd booked a vet appointment for the next day. She jumped out of that fucking car and ran off with her mate Pedro and was literally like a different dog. And it was 2 days, I think, of wearing the bands. And I was like, what the holy shit? Like, I could not believe it. And from that day on, she never took the band off. And then we got, obviously, Maverick, my other dog, and we got Woof. Again, a phone call to Matt, because Woof is a Jack Russell who runs on three legs all the time. I don't know why Jack Russells do it. Anyone know? Let me know.
They do.
But the leg, yeah. I don't know why they do it, but the leg that he was using at the back kept getting so painful because he was overusing it and he was catching it. And we used to keep finding him like hiding behind the toilet or in the garden in a bush, just stuck, like in absolute agony. So again, rang Matt. I was like, Matt, he's only 1 year old. Is it worth putting a collar on him? And Matt was like, yes, Jenny, just fucking get a collar on him. I am not joking. And we'd also been at the vets. We'd spent $2,000 on investigating why he was in pain, $2,000 in x-rays, everything. And they said nothing wrong with him. But yet, twice a week, three times a week, he'd be crippled. Put the band on him. It's never happened since. Actually, that's a lie. It happened a couple of times early on and then it's never happened. And Maverick wears one because he's got arthritis in his back. And Maverick is in hospital at the moment having abdominal surgery. And I said to the vet, do not take that collar off. You are not, the moment he's had his surgery, that collar goes back on because A, I know it will help him heal. And B, without it, his arthritis clicked in.
Yeah, I mean, dogs seem to react very quickly to our technology. I've had people who, I think a lovely one is jumping in the back of the car, which you mentioned, running upstairs. You know, I think that's a real heartbreaking thing for us dog owners to have where we sleep with our dogs. You know, they jump into our bed at night and they cuddle into us. And then at some point you think, where's the dog? And it's, they can't go up the stairs. It's a really sad part of having an elderly dog. You know, you see them running upstairs. And I can't tell you the amount of times that we've been in that situation and they put on our collar and then they've called us and said, oh, my dog runs up the stairs again. Thank you so much. So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know where we go from that as a company or as an industry, really, frankly, because, you know, they want us to give what they're called limpet muscle powder and these things that's managed to achieve clinical evidence that to reduce joint pain. And, you know, I don't know where they get them from. I look at the studies myself and I see there's been done on 25 dogs and I think, well, how's that gone through peer review? But maybe they know someone that I don't know that's managed to get that through. But, you know, I think as pet owners, we have to be just open-minded to stuff like that. And, you know, Ben has pet horses and he has working horses. He has both. So he's a good person to interrogate. What do you think of them? Mavis, who has a dog and has spent £50 on her collar, wants the collar to work. So maybe she's going to tell you that the collar works. It's just a part of our industry, placebo and, you know, the power of the mind, two very important.
I'd say as well, there's the thing of, there's the kind of topical use of the bands or like the lifestyle use. So like my older horses, like the ones I've spoken about, and to be honest, these days, everything's got freaking bands on. Everything, anything looks slightly off. I'm like, get the bands on it. It'll be fine. We'll carry on. But like those ones that, you know, maybe have those like a bit of arthritis or they've had a hard paper round, maybe they're 20 and you hack it out, but it spent all its life jumping and hunting and eventing. Like, yeah. And those horses can wear those constantly. Yeah. I will say like the only time I take the bands off is if I hack them out, I just worry about a branch or something catching in and tripping me up. Totally. I don't know. But then the other thing is that we've had one of our mates who's helped us with the filming and stuff for this. Like his horse, when it goes away, stresses in a stable and its legs can swell up from box walking a bit and stuff. And so he just has the bands and his horse wears it overnight at competitions. Yep. You know, so it can be for those little things as well. Like maybe your horse always lives out, but then when you go away to competing, they have to stay in overnight. You're worried about swelling in legs and stuff like that.
I'd also add to that that I think that we as a we have to kind of adjust the way that we look at healthcare in general anyway, and we have to be more preventative rather than reactive. Yes. And I think that's you know, that's being seen a lot, human side of healthcare now. It's much easier to prevent something than to actually react to it. And I think that really does open up a lot of opportunities for us as pet owners, because if you can get out of your skeptical mind and try stuff effectively isn't going to do any harm, but it might create a benefit, then why not, really? And so, yeah, that preventative kind of approach, I think, is done by professionals systematically, but not so much in the pet industry and not so much in the amateur. And not, you know, when we go to yards, the word of preventative care isn't really there. Whereas, you know, at professional yards, it's, I mean, we got to keep them in tip-top shape. So I think that's changing. Just in my short time in the equine industry, there has been a change. I think COVID maybe helped with that. That people, I think, started to wake up to the fact that it's maybe not just what you're told by your GP. There is another way of doing it or researching it. And I think some of the myths around our industry are being debunked more, you know. Like I said about blood flow, magnets don't increase blood flow. Fact.
I thought that as well. I was like, oh, shit, I've been conned.
But you know what? Go on the websites for these companies that manufacture magnet therapies, and some of their USPs are increases blood flow, or ours have stronger magnets than theirs.
Yeah. Otherwise, like when you see like 24 hours in A&E, and say someone's like, you know, got diabetes and one of their feet's going manky, they'd be like, "Cool, here's a magnetic shoe. Put it on. Fix it."
Exactly. Like, yeah, it's just myth.
Or and like really, if you cut your leg, you could put a magnet on your shoulder and it'd stop it. Because it's like, it's keeping all the blood up here. Like,
Don't use Wolverine. You know, if you've got a problem. Magnets on, yeah, you don't need that.
That makes me think of the old days with the Friday night, let the Scania see the magnet.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Because in the old days, before all the tachographs was high tech as they are, that you in your lorries you have to have these things that make sure that you legally drive for the correct amount of times. It doesn't work now because everything's so high tech, but in the old days, if you put a big old magnet on the dashboard, it would fuck the tachograph up so you could get home.
Exactly.
Okay, that was a really funny joke for anyone who's A, old, and B, drives a lorry.
All of those, all of the horse husbands and dads and fathers who have to drive the things to these competitions enjoyed that.
Okay, well done.
we'll go with you. I mean, one of your questions, Jen, was that they said, where on the leg should the bands go?
Yeah, so it's from Rachel. She said, also, if you get, she's very polite, Rachel, if you get the time, please ask Xtremes, have they ever experienced horses not being able to tolerate their bands in one position but able to in another? My mare can't wear them on her cannon turnout location, but seems all right with them on her other, on her pasterns.
She's right. I mean, yeah, of course, that horses are mammals sensitive. You know, some of them have sensitive legs. Some of them will have sensitive areas of the leg. So one side of the leg will be more sensitive than the other. And you put any tack, not just our bands, in it, ultimately there's neoprene in our product, which is a material which we potentially will look at changing in the future because it is neoprene. So some horses don't like neoprene against their legs. So they can go anywhere on the body. I mean, we've developed them to go on the cannon bone because it's the most practical place for them to be on a horse. But, you know, our dog collars go on the neck and our human bands go on our wrists and ankles.
Mine goes on my ankle. I've got my ankle.
Yeah. So it really is about applying our technology to the body, not necessarily where on the body. So if your horse can't wear them on the cannon bone, then yeah, they can go around the pastern. In fact, you know, what we would recommend, actually, if you look at the arterial artery which runs through the horse's leg, which is in theory how our technology gets around the body, is slightly closer under the pastern, under the fetlock than it is above. So actually, if your horse is severely lame and is going through some serious rehabilitation and is on box rest, we would recommend in most cases to put them on the pastern, because it's, but you know, from our perspective, you'll see on our website, we do studies, and those studies, we have to be consistent across those studies. So from day one, we chose near fore and off hind for all our studies. So there's a bit of confusion in the industry about where our product is worn. What leg should they be worn on? Should I put them on the hind leg? Should I put them on the front leg? Should I alternate them? It makes no difference as long as they're on two legs. I think if you're a show jumper and you're out competing jumping, then there's impact on the front legs, obviously. So it would make sense if I was in your shoes to put them on the front legs. But equally, the horses are pushing their entire weight from their hind legs. So, you know, it could be an argument to have them on the hind legs. So it makes no difference. And I think that's what makes it really easy to use as a product. Just get them on wherever suits your horse.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'd say around the cannon bone, particularly in the UK, if you're turning your horse. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, these are 24/7. You can wear them through the winter, through, I mean, obviously there's some horse care and management involved in that. But, around the cannon bone, out of the mud, out the snow.
Yeah. I wear my one on my leg at night. I've got one of the leg ones. And I swear to God, it does help me sleep. But what I did, because I had a plane ride just to Calgary the other day, and I've got a really bad lower back, and I was in agony, and it was only an hour and a half. So when I flew to England last week, I was like, I'm going to take my band, and I'm going to put it on the plane. I did look like I was on day release, Matt. I'm not going to lie.
You're on day release.
Because it does, because they do, when the ones on your leg do look like a tag. So.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, yeah.
And I actually forgot about it. And people must have thought I was nuts because walking to the loo and stuff. And I was 8 hours into the flight and my back started to hurt. And I was like, Jesus, it did hurt eventually, but that was after 8 hours. And I'd only been on the plane for an hour before and it had been hurting. So I don't know, but I have a feeling that that must have helped in some way, because I lasted a lot longer on the flight with it on than I certainly did without it. So I was like, I'm never now flying without it. Because it just, and also it does, it gives me that reassurance that I'm doing something practical when I'm sat for 12 hours on a bloody flight, if you know what I mean as well. Like you say, that kind of, like,
absolutely. Just,
yeah.
Mm. You know, your listeners are equine based predominantly, but you know, we do a lot of work in the human side of things that we don't advertise, we don't market, we don't promote, we can't. A lot of positive responses coming at the moment from menopause and the impact that our product, the ankle band in particular, has on women that are going through menopause, a subject that 10 years ago women didn't talk about, and now women are much more open to talk about, and even with their men. So I think it's a opportunity for people in that situation to investigate, really, because there are, you know, we can't say it. You'll never see us talk about that on marketing. Yeah. We just can't. There's too many regulations involved. But, there's some serious evidence coming out about that. So hopefully that will lead to somewhere.
Well, the way I feel, Matt, and I think I rang you as well. I was like, have you got any evidence? And he was like, no, Jenny, but anything. And I think that's one of the reasons I wore it as well, because I'm, as people who listen to this podcast know, that I'm an angry perimenopausal woman. And it's all right. Ben is very good at talking about it with me. But it definitely is the sleep thing. It is the sleep thing. And it's definitely helped me sleep. So for me, if it's that, it's definitely helped me sleep. So, and again, it's that reassurance. I'm doing something. I'm not putting drugs in my body. And I'm doing something to help me. And it's definitely helping me sleep, which will then help me be less angry, which makes me a nice person. Stop laughing, Ben.
Yeah. Nicer, but never nice.
Also, just before we go on to some of the things that people have sent on Instagram, I said to Matt when I was having a chat with him, I was like, Matt, have you ever seen that material that's a bit crazy as well? And I don't know how it works, but it cools dogs down. And I was like, you know, like that stuff that can cool dogs. I was like, why has no one ever made that into a boot and added like stuff? And he was like, funny you should say that, Jenny. We are coming out with a new product.
You taking credit?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely taking credit for your new genius idea. But you were like, I'm one step ahead of you. Yay, there it is. Tell us about your new product
that I'm
super excited about. Like, very cool. Very cool.
That's fine. It started from going to a horse event, actually, at 35 degrees in Melbourne, and all of them wearing ice packs. And we went up to one rider, and they were talking to us about their ice packs on their horses and why they used them, and they took them off, and she handed them to me, and they were hot. And so I said to her, these are ice packs, yeah? Yeah. So why are you using them? I'm cooling my horse's legs down. Okay, right. You do realise they're hot, don't you, though? And they were hot. And I immediately knew, even being non-equine and never owning my own horse, that there is significant impact in reducing the temperature of a horse's legs, particularly directly after exercise. You know, and you go to events, we do quite a bit of an endurance, and we see them, you know, stop off with their vet checks. The first thing that's done is the hose comes out. And, I think you all do that within the equine industry. You understand the importance of that to reduce the temperature in your horse. And so these ice products that are on the market are flawed, utterly flawed, in my opinion, flawed.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, you know, Ben's going through his ACL issue at the moment. And there is not a product on the market that Ben can buy to stick on his knee and stick an ice pack in it and sit there for half an hour with an ice pack. The reason why is because after 3 minutes of an ice pack against your skin, you're thinking, shit, this hurts, you know? And so I did start to do a bit of research into that, really, and I looked at the science behind the cooling. Do we want to ice the leg of a horse, or do we want to cool the leg of a horse? Because they're two very different things. And so we started to develop a product with a thermal imaging expert. So I wanted to know visually what was happening. So we started developing a product. It transpires that streams as a technology, unlike traditional magnets, doesn't create a thermal reaction in the horse's leg, which is significant when you're looking at reducing inflammation, or if you're trying to help recovery of a muscle or tendon or ligament issue. We all know we don't want to apply heat to that. We want to apply cold, in essence. And the emergence of cryotherapy, which is, less so here in the UK, but far more so in America and Canada and Australia, where they understand the importance of temperature and the relevance of temperature when it comes to healing and recovery. And so, I knew our technology worked fantastically well at supporting a horse in recovery and that it didn't create heat. So I understood that we could put our technology in a boot. And funny, that coincided with us working in dog agility, where in the dog agility world, when the dog comes out of the ring, I noticed a lot of the handlers were using cooling materials and various materials to help reduce the temperature of their dog. And so that's where the product started, really. And I think it was released last week to the UK market. And they are really cool, frankly. They are a pretty cool product. We've got some data coming out in the next couple of months which shows exactly what's happening, which I think is an important part of that. They're effectively ice boots that don't need ice. So, another part of that, sorry, I'm waffling here, but another part
of that. No, I'm enjoying it. I find it fascinating.
We were going to and we were seeing these ice boots, or a very well-known brand in the industry, who I think probably 60, 70% of people out there have this product. And various people I know in the industry that I call now friends that have horses all say to me, they're a fantastic product. I always forget to freeze the ice pack. Or I always forget to charge the vibration packs that come with my ones. Or or my freezer's full of food. So I got back and I haven't got any room to put my ice packs in the freezer. And
or it's taking the ice to an event and it's still being cold at the end of the bloody event. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many stories, and I think we all relate to that when it comes to going to an event. And I just knew that we could revolutionise that side of the market, really. And I hope that, I think a sign of us achieving quite a good result here is that I know a couple of our competitors are already looking at following us. So it's always a
Do you have to wet the boots? How do they work? What do you have to do?
So you soak them, you shake them, you stick them on. I mean, it really is that simple. We've had a lot of funny questions asked to us about them. I think one of the more complex questions to answer without being rude to people is, how long do they stay cold? We sell in Australia, America, Canada, in big, you know, there are big markets. And today outside in the UK is a very different beast than it is in Australia. And, you know, how long does an ice cube stay frozen for? It's kind of the same question, isn't it, really? So I think where we are with the cool boot as a product is that it's obvious what the product does, and we're now at that stage where we want to be able to show people specifically what the boot does. At the moment, people that have adopted the boot have fed back some really fantastic responses, and so we'll just go from there, really. I've been through this with the Equestreams, like the old Velcro that used to fall off. God, the word Velcro was the bane of my life for years.
And Matt, you are our welfare sponsor for the tour. I, with this podcast, first of all, did set out. I spoke to you very early on when this first came about. And you jumped at the chance of coming on board with us. And it was just so brilliant because obviously you're helping keep the podcast going and you've been an advertiser. But at the same time, working with you and anything that helps horses is just so fucking brilliant in my eyes. But you are coming on tour. What is it about us that you've like, because I just feel like we work so well together, but from your point of view, like, we are just a kind of three bumbling idiots taking this, but we are trying to do good in the world. This is a really stupid way of saying thank you for believing in us and coming on tour with us. And you're going to be there as well.
It's an absolute pleasure. I think it's quite a refreshing talking about the podcast, it's quite a refreshing listen compared to a lot of the Equine podcasts. You know, I'm non-equine. It's funny to say that when I work 12-hour days in the Equine.
When you confidently know what a pastel and a cannon bone is.
Yeah, I probably know more about the health of a horse than I do about... I mean, put me on the back of a horse and I'll just stay there. You know, I'll be looking around doing what the hell I do. But, you know, frankly, I've always been one that likes to have the control in the hands on a motorbike more than I would on a horse. So the live animal side of it's always scared me slightly. I just feel like initially it was your introduction, Jenny. I've known you for years, as you said, and I've got a lot of time for you and the people that you have introduced me to in the past. But equally, I had probably messaged Ben about 15 times previous to this. It was an opportunity for us to expose our product to a wider audience, which in today's world is not a cheap thing to do. I can't tell you the amount of budget we put into Google and Facebook and stuff, but it is eye-watering. So it's a lot nicer to have a personal relationship with the three of you and to just have a conversation about a product than it is to do a TV advert or a much simpler route, and it's a more personal way to do work.
And you are now known by Lucinda Green as the Magnet Man.
Magnet Matt,
that's it. She was so funny. So you came on the Pub Pod with us as a guest, and afterwards Lucinda, who is just wonderful, as we all know, But she messaged me afterwards going, you must give me his number. I was slightly scared for you, by the way. But she was just, she just wants to learn, doesn't she? She was obsessed with learning about it and questioning you. And it was brilliant.
Yeah, it's a truly wonderful woman. Like, she really is. And, you know, from a credibility perspective, you know, what did I do for Lucinda? Like, personally, I gave her a set of bands. So there's no skin off my nose. And what was the outcome of that? Her horse felt better. She recognised the impact, similar to what Ben had said. And that's led us into four or five different stables with different riders. And, you know, where does that go? I don't know. But why does it matter? We've helped probably 10 horses from helping one.
Ben, you are grinning like a Cheshire cat today. Are you sure you're not still on drugs?
No, I'm just happy. Like, I just think it's really great. I just think it's a great product, and people just need to trust it. Just try it.
Just trust the process.
Yeah. Try it. Yeah. It's not going to work for everything. It's not going to work for every product, but I mean for every horse, but it helps most.
Yeah, don't be that arsehole who's like, I tried streams because my horse broke its leg, and you're like, fuck off. Like, but still, it would help with the healing. It would help. I thought that after I'd said it.
I'm really interested in your ankle bands. Can you tell me where you wear them? It's a nice one that we've got. I mean, some of the questions that our support team get asked, you know. I'm interested in your wristbands. Tell me where I wear it.
Oh, don't. Don't. Like,
that's amazing.
The advertising, yeah.
Or chewing horses. You know, I put your bands on and they fell apart in the first 1 hour. Oh, that's really sorry to hear that. Can you send us some pictures? You know, 15 pieces inside the box. It's like, do you think they fell apart? Do you think your horse has probably, like, ripped them off?
Yeah.
Right. So on social media, we did a couple of posts. I think you've answered most of your questions, actually, Matt, and like with all, like in one way or another. People have sent us questions, which is... Ben, how is the healing up going from the ACL, from Friendship and Blessing? Are you healing well? Are doctors pleased with you?
Yeah, vaguely.
Oh, God, are you sitting still, Ben? Good.
Yeah, no, I sort of am. Nah, we fell at the first hurdle, but we're going to be all right. Like, first checkup, I went in and they were like, you should be able to progress to one crutch at this point, but you can't.
So. I do have a question for you, actually, Ben. What's your gran doing? If you've nicked her mobility scooter, what's she doing?
This is awkward, Matt.
It's not awkward, it's funny. She's a little bit dead. Sorry. No, we're a really dark sense of humour. Farming family, it is. We are grim.
No band is going to fix that one, Matt. Not even your bands, I'm
and
afraid.
It's my own fault, because I said I borrowed it from Gran, and there is a little bit of that, because when people ask me, I say, oh, I've borrowed it from her, she doesn't use it much these days. So,
well, it's true.
Sorry. But yeah, I'm healing well.
I hope you're saluting her as you're doing handbrake turns around a corner.
I absolutely am. And we are going to soup up my scooter a little bit.
Yeah.
Are you? Oh, God. One of the other questions is, can I read this one? Because I feel like I need cheering up today because my dog's poorly. Not a question, but can you tell Jenny she's fucking amazing and a true inspiration if she doesn't know it? I'm just going to read that one out. Just going to take that one. Thanks, Izzy. Because, Matt, these boys, do you know how much I get messages? Oh, I love Ben. Oh, I love Simon. He's so hot. But Simon's the nicest man in the world. Ben's so awesome. It's nice to have a bit of love.
You've got one now, Jen.
Thanks, my one fan, Izzy. Thank you. Then someone's just sent a message saying, can you talk about fear?
If you're ever scared of anything with a horse, think of the smallest way in which you could do what ever scares you. So if you're scared of riding flat out, maybe it's just standing near the tacked up horse on the mounting block. Maybe it's standing near the mounting block with the horse. If you're scared of jumping, maybe it's setting up two jumpings without a pole on the floor, even in between. And what you want to do, say, is repeat that exercise day after day for as long as you can until you find it painfully boring. Until you are so bored to tears by that level of the concept that you could take a little step forward. So if you're terrified of jumping, just keep walking between two jump wings. Then put a pole on the floor. If you can walk over it, then you can trot over it. Trot over it until that's boring. Canter over it until that's boring. And then slowly, piece by piece, build up those things. Because what you're also doing, apart from desensitizing yourself to the exercise or idea that's scaring you, what you're also doing is getting absolute mastery at the foundations and the basics of each concept of that exercise. And with knowledge comes power, not as in like power to change the world, although you can, but just that power to be able to handle the situations that could arise unexpectedly. And so there, like for all the crazy things I do that terrify me, that's how I have built up my confidence to get them, whether that be standing on the horses, doing the trick riding, you know, any of those things. If you can do the safest, simplest version of it until you are bored, then progress. That's my top thing on fear.
Look at that. He's so profound, isn't he? Oh, goodness.
No, well, semi. Like, you get it's not an uncommon question. I've got a few of those like that. I can be so drunk that I'm just sort of like, meh, like Noel Gallagher in a corner. And then someone can ask a Liberty question, and it's like, who put 50 pence in the dickhead? Because I'll like, yeah, bam, 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 bam. There's the information back.
You couldn't do it on Oromorph last week. I have to say, that was far more eloquent than anything that came out of your gob on the last podcast.
No. Yeah.
Right. Matt, what has annoyed you this week?
People asking me how long cool boots stay cold. That's been the bane of my week. No, what's been annoying, I've had a pretty cool week, it has to be said. I've launched a new product. It doesn't happen often. So I've been on a bit of a cloud nine sort of roll. Yeah, I've had a good week. I can't add to it, actually. Yeah. I do have a 5-year-old son who asks me the most ridiculous questions at the moment, which I cannot get past the "but why" stage at the moment. So whatever I say, the response is "but why." So that wouldn't, I say, annoys me. It's just quite endearing. You'll get there, Ben.
With Pink Pig.
Little Pink Pig.
What's annoyed you this week, then, Benjamin?
What's annoyed me this week? Dog walkers. Ooh. Dog walkers have annoyed me.
Did they have a corgi? Have you been attacked by a corgi?
They had a corgi that was an influencer. No. What dog walkers have annoyed me, because just use your brain slightly. Like, we have a 2.5 mile straight stretch of road leaving our yard, and there are open, huge, wide grass verges and fields on both sides. If you can see that I'm driving down, and it's a narrow road, so if you can see that we're driving like an 18 or like 42 ton horse box down the drive or down the road, or like driving a pair of carriage horses, could you get, if there's a group of like 6 of you with your dogs, could you all get off on the left or right hand side?
No.
Not half of you go to the left, half of you go to the right, and then all 6 of you give us dirty looks like we drove far too close to you and your dogs. When you made it so that you put yourselves as close to the road as possible, either side on the grass verges, so we then have to try and manoeuvre through the tiny gap, you could have all just stood on one side.
So
it's your drive.
Idiocy. Oh, yeah,
it's my drive. No, it's not. It's a bit of a shared road. But it's like, it's just like, people, come on, use a little bit of, like, just a bit of sense.
And they're all corgi owners, right? That's what we've got to keep up with this podcast. You know how many corgi videos I get? I fucking love it. It's brilliant. We get so many. And most of them are of corgis being savage or stealing sausages off small children, but some of them are very cute. I do enjoy them. Please keep sending them. What's annoyed me? So, I'm still like, this is why I look so terrible, because it's very hard to explain how much I love my dog. Like, I genuinely don't know what I'm going to do. He's nearly 13 when Maverick dies. Like, I love that dog more than pretty much everyone I know, bar my children and my mum. I should probably say Gregor in that sentence.
I was going to say Gregor.
yeah. love you, baby. But the fact that Gregor didn't question the amount I've just had to pay for him and my English credit card, I'm now officially poor. I may have to sell one of my children. So Maverick's been sick all week. Very long story. Very dehydrated. 4 different vets. Very long story. Like the most poorly I've ever seen him. And here Canada's very odd. What's annoyed me is you go to a vet in England. Most of the vets you go to can do scans, surgery, the lot. In Canada, they basically send you to all these different places to go and they can't do anything. Also, can't take guinea pigs. Most vets here only do dogs and cats. A guinea pig is counted as an exotic animal over here. Those vets don't take them. Ridiculous, I know. So anyway, vet number 4, we finally get Maverick in and they have to knock him out to do a proper abdominal scan. And they find what they've told me is a ball and he's going to need surgery. I'm like, there's no fucking way Maverick had a ball. Maverick does not chase balls. I was like, this is ridiculous. Anyway, quoted 10 to 12 grand for the surgery. They're nice enough to tell you in advance how much this is going to cost. Anyway, I'm like, I don't care. I'll sell a child, whatever. Some of the insurance will cover it. Again, it doesn't work the same as England. So they knock him out and they ring me last night. And I have sobbed all of yesterday because I'm worried that Maverick is going to die because he's got so fragile. He's been so sick. And do you know what was in his stomach? This is where...
I'm trying to think what it could be if he doesn't choke balls. Go on.
No. A fucking 12 grand carat gold roast potato.
No. What? Yep. So he just swallowed a whole roast potato?
Yeah, which my husband has, I'm guessing, had cremated when he cooked it. Because I wasn't here. I was in England. And the last time we had roast potatoes was on Monday night. Gregor has a tendency to overcook things. So the only thing I can think of is he's overcooked this roast potato and made it undigestible. Obviously, both dogs have gone to eat it. Maverick's gone, fuck you. Well, a kid's dropped it and just wolfed it down whole. And yeah, sat in his stomach blocking. It's been in there for a week and a half.
But at least you know that he's going to be okay now.
Yeah. World's most fucking expensive Michelin-starred roast fucking potato, excuse my language. In a way, it made me feel better that it wasn't a ball. Because you know those bouncy balls you get in fucking party bags? That's what annoys me. I have made the kids go round the house finding any that may be in our house. You know they send you home party bag? Why? That is a dog-sized chokeable party ball. So I just assumed it was one of those. So please, people, get rid of those. But it's just not like Maverick. He's just not that kind of a dog. So it's made me feel better in the fact that it was not like a human error in that respect. But who just throws food for their dogs or lets their dogs have a snack from the table? I'm not joking. Maverick is getting tiny, teeny cut up food for the rest of his life. But yeah, so there you go, people. That is what my dog has cost me about 15 grand.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Well, it's a nice ending to the story that you know what it is, as Ben says.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
He'll be okay.
So the good news is, and why I've stopped crying, is he survived surgery and he's made it through the night. And they were like, he's really perky this morning. I'm not surprised. He's probably feeling better than he's felt in a week and a half. And he's on all the drugs in the world. It was a bit like Ben on the podcast last week. Like, drugged up to the eyeballs is Maverick. But yes, so I'm waiting for a call from the vet to see when we can bring him home. It'll probably be a couple of days. But yeah, so there you go. That is what has annoyed me. A very expensive roast potato. And can I blame Gregor's cooking? I'm unsure at this point. It may come up in an argument at some point in time. You're
ask
both
for the potato. Ask for the potato.
Well, to bring it back, have it in a pot and frame it.
Was this you? Yeah.
But yeah, so my poor little dog. But yeah, I just hate the fact that they don't live long enough. I just feel like 13 years was not enough time. That was the hardest bit, was leaving him there, knowing he might not survive the operation. Like, you don't, like, do you know what I mean? Just that, he's my soulmate.
Maybe he's just preparing you. You see, as your soulmate, he's preparing you for harder times ahead.
Thanks, Matt. I'm never giving him potatoes again.
No, don't.
Anyway, I'm not in tears. I'm just now bankrupt, but it's fine. So
you'd rather be bankrupt with a Maverick.
Yes, absolutely. So please, can you buy tickets to the tour, people? Because that is my pay off my credit card to pay for my dog fund. Because that's all the money I'm going to make out the tour is going on the dog. So please buy a ticket. You can buy tickets on Kivago. and come on the tour. Matt will be on the tour. So if you've got any pressing questions about where ankle bands live, go, please come and ask him. He hates me now. Right, Matt, thank you so much. I do love you as a friend, but I love the fact that you believe in our pod and you are on board and supporting us, but also that we are hopefully in some way making a difference to animals' lives in some way, shape or form. And I know that that is what's most important to you. And I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said, Jen. Thank you. And thank you for the time of both of you. It's like, you know, it's a lovely opportunity and it's a nice relaxed chat. And anyone else that's asked to come on the podcast, don't even think about it. Just take the opportunity and go and chat to the guys.
Yay. Thanks, Matt. Benjamin, I love you. Oh, shout out to Simi.
Yeah, Simi. And Simi absolutely loves the bands and the boots and everything. But as always, he's said yes to too many things.
So he was
tired. No, I'm joking. Yeah. I don't know where he is. He's picking a horse up or something, isn't he? He's out somewhere in his lorry.
He said yes, and he was all ready for it, and then went, oh, I've said yes to too many things and I can't make the podcast. We were like, don't worry. Me and Morphine Ben have got this. So we need
good luck with
your videos.
Yeah, thank you very much. It'll be grand.
Go and stick a cool boot on it. Right.
Absolutely.
All that is left to
say. And you've got Georgie to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I have a feeling by the end of his recovery, she might want to throttle him with one of the bands.
She's already there.
I love it. Right. All that's left to say is, Ben, sing us out. Matt, shut up and ride.
Shut up and ride, 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 ride. Shut up and ride, ride, ride.